Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening to Creative Control. While I have you here, please consider supporting Youth Empowerment and Support Services, otherwise known as YES. Based in Edmonton, Alberta, YES provides immediate and low-barrier overnight and day shelter, temporary supportive housing, and individualized wraparound supports for young people aged 15 to 24. They work collaboratively within a network of care focused on the prevention of youth homelessness by providing youth with the necessary supports to stabilize their housing, improve their well-being, build life skills, connect with community, and avoid re-entry into homelessness. Learn more about how to donate or otherwise support YES by visiting yess.org.
Hey, this is Adam from Toronto, and I support Creative Control because Vish is full stop one of the best arts interviewers in Canada, or anywhere in the world, really. He approaches every episode like he's known the artist for years, creating a conversational atmosphere that gets straight to the heart of the work. No one else in podcasting gets it quite right like he does, with a mixture of meticulous research, wise artistic insights, and well-humored personal connections. I proudly support Vish and Creative Control on Patreon. You should too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Spencer Burton is a talented songwriter, musician, and singer based in his longtime home of Southern Ontario. Once a member of the underground rock and roll band Attack in Black with Daniel and Ian Romano and Ian Kehoe, Burton has gone on to explore folk and country music, initially under the name Grey Kingdom for a couple of albums, but since 2012, as himself. The latest addition to his accomplished discography is a lush country record made in Nashville, Tennessee, and it was released by Dynalone Records on January 26th, 2024. It's called North Wind, and it prompted Spencer to return to this show for a talk about things like owning a hobby farm and regenerative agriculture, how the pandemic compelled him to retreat to a cabin in northern Ontario to collect himself and write some songs, bonding more with one's family during strange times, pondering cultural work these days, finding a creative soulmate in producer Andrea Tokic, who runs the Bomb Shelter studio in Nashville, enduring a dental emergency for a live take of the new song Goodbye, writing the children's album and now children's book, The Mountain Man, playing a few shows, other future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners just like you who follow and subscribe to this donor-driven podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, which is the primary and most reliable way for podcasters like me to make a living. This is my primary day job these days, so if you can support my work on Patreon, I would appreciate it. Thank you so much. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 843 of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Spencer Burton, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Shines like midnight's raindrop gold. Hey, Spencer, how's it going?
Hey, Vish, how are you?
I'm well. It's very nice to see you again and have you back on the show. And where in the world are you today?
I'm at my home here in southern Ontario. Beautiful sunny day. So sunny, in fact, that I feel like I look like a sheet of white paper right now with the light coming through the window. But it's I can't complain.
You are wearing an appropriate hat. For the sun, it's a wide brim. People can't see this wide brimmed hat. You should have good sun protection. I think.
I'm a pale guy. I got to keep the sun off of me at all times.
I don't burn as a brown person. I never have burned the way my white colleagues have burned. I never burn. It's gotten. I should always actually have put sunscreen on. I realize, and hopefully, this doesn't portend some terrible fate for me. But I only in recent years, since meeting my wife, she's like, sunscreen? I'm like, I guess I never wore it. And yeah, if I don't, I burn now too. So it's like, it's hotter, you know, and sunnier. Yeah. So it's not
like
great.
The world itself, you mean?
Yeah. Not just me and my aura. It's just the way.
what I do is I just wear big hats, long sleeves, and full jeans all the time, like no matter what time of year.
Really?
Which makes. Over the years, I've become very comfortable in the summer, but now in the wintertime, I'm always super cold because my body's so used to the extra warmth that I put on it during the warm months.
Right. So you need to wear triple the clothing in the winter for your body to acclimatize.
Probably. Keep the house at 65 and wear like four layers and a pair of slippers. That's how I do things around here.
Well, it's nice to know this about you, and it's nice to know that you know, I was thinking about one of the songs on your brilliant new record here, which I have a copy of. I'm holding it up for
it
Spencer. The album is called North Wind. Farm Life was the song that just came to mind as we were talking about your home situation there. You live on a farm, yes, a working farm, so to speak.
It's one of those, it's a small scale. I like to call it a hobby farm because in the grand scheme of things, most real farms make the farm owners money. Whereas mine costs me money. So right. I like to call it a hobby farm, but at the end of the year, you know, it may not bring in money, but it brings in comfort and a feeling of security, right? It's a small, you know, just under 2 acres, but we raise our own food, livestock, I mean, and we also grow our own produce. And because of that, it's like we have this sense of comfort because we know where our food came from. We know we're not forced to partake in the machine that is, I'm going to sound too intense here, but you know what I mean? The machine that is capitalism, where you're forced to buy your food at the grocery store and you don't know where it came from. And it's, you know, when you eat a pack of ground beef, it's like 400 different animals. And I'm trying not to sound preachy. Obviously, I'm very fortunate to have this opportunity that fell in my lap and be able to do this. I know not everyone is, but yeah, so I'm ranting here. It's not a, you know.
No, it's not a rant. We talked about this. We talked about your farm. Yeah. We talked about the farm the last time you were on to talk about your album, Coyote. which, by the way, the title track from that album is now curiously on this album. So we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a moment. But yeah. Hey, I had came across a thing recently, since we're talking about farming, and I didn't know about it before. Mm-hmm. Have you ever heard tell of regenerative agriculture? Do you know what that is?
Yeah, I've read a bit about it.
Yeah.
I'd like you to elaborate on it, because I never got into it myself to like actually do it.
It has a lot. There's a guy named Gabe Brown who I came upon recently. He lives in, I think, one of the Dakotas. I want to say North Dakota. Anyway, he's one of the biggest proponents of it. And there's like a documentary film called Common Ground. And there's a sequel to it or something, or maybe I got that backwards. Anyway, I'm talking off the cuff here, and forgive me if I got anything wrong, anyone who knows anything about this. Yeah. But regenerative agriculture basically is a holistic approach to farming and soil health. And basically, the tenets of regenerative agriculture are such that particularly farmers, have been putting the wrong stuff in the soil, and that is leading to climate change, and that is leading to poor nutrition. And so basically, and I can't recite them all off the top of my head, but there's five or six principles they follow. And his case study is himself. He inherited a family farm. It was in ruins. Nothing would grow. Everything was terrible. The soil was bad. And then he read about it himself and then applied it. Complete reversal of fortunes. Like, everything's great. The animals are doing better. The soil is healthier. The food is more nutritious because there's no pesticides or herbicides and chemicals. And there's less soil tilling, all this stuff. And I only bring it up. I don't normally talk about farming on the show, but you live on a farm. And I thought I would mention it to you. But that's it in a nutshell. It's just reorienting yourself as an agriculture person to figure out the best way to make your soil healthy. And that, if everyone did it, apparently, the environment would be better. Because part of the thing that the pesticides kill are these microorganisms that actually consume the methane-producing properties. Because you've probably heard this too, Spencer, that agriculture is one of the biggest causes of global warming and climate change. And I was like, what? How? What do we do about this? Like, is it the joke is like, oh, it's the cows farting?
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever. But apparently, no, it's a whole bunch of things. So is that your understanding of it? Did I capture that?
Yeah, it's a slippery slope, because we're so far gone from living the way that we're meant to be living.
Yes.
That to take these step backwards would almost be impossible, because we would be putting so many generations of what we know now at risk, I guess, right? Like I always say it's slippery slope, because I have so many friends who do farm for an actual living, yeah, right? They've been doing it 5-6 generations deep now, and they have these 200 acre pieces of land, and they just do what they know, and they grow food to be sent out, right, to grocery stores and factories to be canned or whatever. And these farmers are only making ends meet as it is, right? I'm talking working 4:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. every night, just going, 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 and they're just making ends meet. And then, you know, sometimes I have these conversations with them when I say, you know, you probably could make just as much money off of 2 acres of land if you did crop, you know, rotational cropping and,
yeah,
you know, fertilized your soil with the pigs that you raise and, you know, compost their feces and use rabbit feces and do all these things and, yep, and blah, blah, blah. And the rotational cropping will keep the soil density and the pH balance proper at certain times of the year. And they're just like, shut up, man.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause it's like, it's just some guy who like reads some books and watches some documentaries, and it's probably the right way to go, but it's such a hard step to take.
Yeah. That's right? Because that's what Gabe has encountered too. And what he suggests, again, I'm not a proponent. I don't know this fella, but what he's proposing is, or what he's proven, he thinks is, it actually works out economically too. Like, it works out that the farmers do better, mm-hmm, when they start applying these practices. But he mentions the same thing. The issue is people have inherited farms and have inherited ways of doing things. It's really hard to break out of that cycle and try something new. It's, yeah, it's risky and it feels weird. But that's the stumbling block. I think one of the major things he suggests is like educating and informing farmers and the people about, yeah, regenerative agriculture is one of its major obstacles. but the actual practice of it in his experience and from what he's seen is actually more effective. So, I don't know anything. I only brought it up because you have the song Farm Life, which you wrote, I think, when you were kind of in isolation. You took a little break from society during the pandemic. And my understanding is, and I'll ask you to elaborate upon this, to basically write the songs on this album, North Wind. Am I capturing that okay? Is that about right?
That's the gist of it, yeah. You know, just like everybody over the pandemic, I feel like I want to just wipe that word from my vocabulary. Pandemic, it brings up so many bad memories, you know, but...
You know, even looking at these photos of you that Vanessa Hines took... You seem like someone who's in a pandemic. You seem like someone who is shell-shocked by the reality of the world. And I'm not saying that you look handsome. You look strong, but you seem, as I read the lyrics on this brilliant record and I listen to the sound of your voice, and as I hold this album in my hand and I listen to it, which I've had the great pleasure of doing in my living room, and the kids love it too, by the way. I can say that I feel someone who is world weary. Is that an accurate, or was anyway? Is that accurate?
Yeah, man, I'm still world weary. Yeah. But over the past few years, the world changed so much from what I had known it to be for so many years, right? I was kind of just fighting, and just like everybody else, I'm nobody special, but I was just fighting and trying to find ways to survive, just like everybody else was. We were incredibly fortunate and had a very small 400 square foot cabin land on our laps through a series of very strange events. But it came to us a place that normally I would never even, you know, I write songs for a living. You know, it's like I'm not a massive artist. So it's like buying a cabin isn't something that is really feasible to someone like me. Yeah. But again, it just wonderful events happened and it landed on my lap. And after spending time up there, this is Northern Ontario. I'll just elaborate on the place a little bit. Northern Ontario, about 10 hours almost from where I live now.
Oh, wow. Really Northern Ontario. Yeah. Okay. Not cottage country per se, as like the Muskokas and whatnot. Okay. Wow.
No, not Muskoka. This is near, just a tiny bit past Sault Ste. Marie.
Okay. Wow.
And it's, it is very isolated, very out there. If you go up there during the week, you're the only person on the lake. Just you and some beavers, and some loons. It's the most breathtaking, peaceful place. It's the kind of place I would have always, you know, whenever I thought about cottage life or whatever, right? This was the place that came to mind, built in the 50s, rustic logs, plain from the local forests. Like it's not, you know, no running water, no electricity. I mean, now there is because I've went a little nuts and I built solar pumps and water coming up from the lake with propane, on-demand hot water showers in the forest, and solar to run the whole camp. Like I tried to make it as livable as possible, in case the world ever actually did end, which was part of what was going on in my mind. But during all this pandemic, I found myself having an incredible difficulty writing music. I didn't even know if it was a bad thing. I just, you know, because the world changed, I changed, and I found so much comfort in using every ounce of my time on growing my own food and raising my own livestock and spending time in the woods, learning local floras and faunas and animal tracks and how to hunt for my food and how to forage for my food. And above all else, spending more time with my family, which was the one beneficial thing I think about the pandemic is that you were forced to spend time with the people closest to you. And because of that, incredible bonds were created.
Absolutely.
I wasn't necessarily not close with my family, you know, my children and my wife and my dog and even my mother who just lives around the corner. Like I wasn't not close to these people, but the bonds that were formed over the pandemic were even, you know, stronger. And I spent so much time in this that music a little bit took a back burner, and it's always in my mind. I always have something I want to say or something I want to create. I love singing. I love playing the guitar. It was always there, but it just didn't seem to me as necessary as the immediate feeling of survival and just love for the ones around me. But then this cabin came into play, And I realized that music also still could be a part of all of this and needed to be a part of all this, right? There's no music is art, and there's no life without art, and there's no love without art. Something I believe anyways.
Yeah, I agree.
So the isolation that I found in this cabin while I was fixing it up and just spending time there, when you've got nothing else around you, right, except for the sounds of Mother Nature, right, the loons in the morning, the ripple on the water, like, it becomes so inspirational that you almost need, like, there's the need to create. Whether it's a poem or a story or a song, I had to do it. It was just like this yearning inside of me. I needed to make something, and the songs just started pouring out. Yeah. I think, I wrote well over, while I was up there, I wrote well over 60 songs, I think.
Wow.
This was many different trips up there, coming back, obviously, and to the farm and then back there, but the songs just kept coming, and apparently only 10 of them didn't suck, but the other,
that can't be true.
The other bunch of them,
I'm sure you just,
well, we'll see. Maybe they'll make their way out to the world someday with some tender love and a bit of reworking.
Yeah.
I just found that up there, there was just a different feeling of inspiration and something that I spiritually and emotionally needed. Yeah. Just that feeling of peace and serenity and solitude.
Well, you said a few things that I want to follow up on there. Chief among them, the fine line between these days, the fine line between being perceived as a practical, logical thinker and being a doomer. That's a big thing now. People will try to, if you say, well, there's a pandemic or clearly the climate is changing, the ocean currents are all fucked up. Well, you're just fucking being negative and being a doomer. And I'm like, but no, this is actual information. Like, why? I think people are afraid of the real, like, actual information, and then they get conspiratorial. And I'm not saying you did this, but you did retreat from the world. And I want to talk to you about that in a moment.
Yeah,
but please. You also said something that stuck out to me there about writing songs, whether it was the right thing to do. I think you said something like that. Well, is it even the right thing to do? And I feel like you kind of couched your resolution to that question by saying you went up to a place and it inspired you to write again. You couldn't help it. But I guess I just want to home in on that question a little bit more. You have a hobby farm. I have a hobby podcast. And right now, this is all I got. I mean, I don't have I've recently lost my day job, and I'm trying to figure out how to provide for my family, and this isn't quite doing it, that kind of thing. But the right thing to do in the moment of time you're in is kind of what I want to home in on. Did you actually, like, beyond yourself being a songwriter who didn't feel inspired, did you have that question of, like, what is the point of this? What is the point of my craft? Like, art means, what did you say? Art is love and art is important. But was it that dire for you where you're like questioning everything you've ever done or anything like that, or why we do these things?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I turned, it's funny. I never believed in the theory of the midlife crisis.
Yes.
I turned 40 last year, which I believe people call the midlife crisis, the time for a midlife crisis. I have no idea. I could only live to 50. My midlife crisis should have happened at 25. I have no idea how it all works, but 40, I don't know if it was just from years of that being drilled into my head, but when I turned 40 last year, I think, there was a bit of, what's the point of everything? Yeah. Not just music, but everything. It's, you have, I don't know. I've been doing music since I was in my early 20s, I guess. And, just never seriously until about 2007 with the band I was previously in, but it's always, been up and down and made many waves, but I'm not, I do other things to provide for my family as well on top of this. So
yes.
There was that thought of is music, although I've realized is very necessary and has become a part of me. And there's always a need for art or creation, but, when it's not 100% the only, like, you know, you're putting 100% into it, but it's not 100% providing for your family. You think to yourself, what am I doing?
Exactly.
You know, it's like, is this a selfish endeavor, right?
Exactly.
Like, this is for me. This, it's like,
yes, exactly. That's what I'm going through right now, actually. And I appreciate that you can relate and have gone through the same feelings. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is, like, you know, you have to have those thoughts, but also you have to do what you love. And if you truly love it, then you'll find other ways, garbage ways to survive and use the music or the podcasting or the interviewing or whatever you do as a means of, especially in the world we live in today, you know, it's not like it was when I read the books, you know, the books from the 70s and 80s where the guy hops in a car and drives down to all the radio stations and plays for them. And they go, this guy's great. Let's shoot him to the top. Like, it's not like that anymore. Yeah. They've made it, you know, maybe convenient for the average listener, but they've made it, the world today is a very difficult place to have music, use it as a source of income, right? Like it's hard to explain because, like, you know, like I do, you know, companies like Spotify and whatnot have been very supportive to me, but when it comes to the world of streaming, it's hard to justify going out. I could imagine, I pay for streaming, but I also still buy records. Right. So, but I can imagine for the average listener, it's hard to go out and spend $35 on a record when you can just press a button on your phone and listen to everything that was ever created. Right. So it's difficult in today's world, which is, you know, where I'll go to say, thank God there's still people who do buy records. And thank God there are people who decide to want to still come to the concert and support the independent artist and still enjoy live music because, those things are really what helps keep artists afloat.
Well, and beyond the keeping them afloat in a economic sense, like you alluded to the fact that, like, people like you, and I guess I'm saying people, a person like me will be like, am I being selfish by exploring this or keeping this going, this expression of my own? But then I have an audience and you have an audience, and I have come to realize that, and I feel also a part of a community, or that I'm supporting a community I care about. So then it's that mix of, like, I think that's what keeps me doing it and not letting it go, even though at this point, and I've always had day jobs, like up until we're speaking, I've always had a day job and tried to figure out how to balance, like you're saying, you know, what you really want to be. I guess I'm just at a point where, like, I assume, Spencer, the music for money, I mean, or for work, music is probably what you'd most want to be doing all the time, right?
Of course. It's your if you can make your passion your job, and you have no job, right? You just
Well, that is your job.
What I'm saying. So what's the saying? You know, there's the saying, it's like, if your job is what you love, then you never work a day in your life, or something like that, right?
Yeah, but our passion projects are really, in terms of viability, I think, are really dependent on other people, which is an interesting dynamic we put ourselves in. You know, when you get a day job, you're like, I'm working for someone, that's reliable income. And as long as I do my job well, that income is going to keep coming in. Whereas in the age of streaming, because I'm in the age of streaming too, right? I'm not getting paid by a company to make my show. I just make it and hope, like hell, that it resonates with enough people each month that they either, you know, crowdfunding or ad rev. It's really a bizarre situation because it's anxiety inducing. Like, what's it going to be this month? You know, freelancing or whatnot. And musicians, are ultimately freelancers, aren't you? On some level.
I think big time. And going back to what you just said, it's also a very hard thing sometimes to, I don't know if the word is promote, but it's like, you know, it's very obvious, at least here in Canada, that we're going through some kind of, I think they're calling it a recession, where things are very expensive and people aren't getting paid. So, you know, when you play a concert or when you're trying to sell a t-shirt, right, it's like, it's sometimes it's a hard thing to justify because, you know, I'm just like, hey, make sure you come to the show, buy some tickets, please, grab a t-shirt. But it's like, oh man, I know a lot of people don't have any money, but they're using what they have to support this independent artist. I think it's tough if you don't have the mindset of, like, a, you know, the CEO of some massive company where you're just like, I don't care, give me your money.
Yes.
It's like, if you are a down to earth, half decent person, which I'm not saying I am, but.
No, I think you are.
I feel like that's a little too, well, too much of a.
If you're articulating this, I think you are. You're self-aware, you know.
Right. I think that's what this world needs. Man, I think we should all just, you know, just go back to living like hobbits. Not that hobbits ever existed. I'm not that delusional, but, you know, just growing your own stuff, being friends with your neighbors, small communities, just having a birthday party every day. God, that'd be nice.
Well, I feel like there's some semblance of what you're saying dotted throughout this record in terms of lyrics about the way things were being maybe a more... This is complicated in this day and age, too, I think, where people get really nostalgic for what they view as simpler times. But then you'll hear from marginalized voices to be those times weren't as simple as you may think for some of us. You know what I mean? But I think what you're talking about is the pace of life being more appealing in, like, when you were up in the cabin, that is, or on your farm, maybe that's a kind of pace of life that's preferable to you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, every generation and every past day on this planet, I'm sure, has had hardships.
Yeah.
Ones that I'm not familiar with, ones that I can't even imagine. Yeah. I mean, the world has a track record of being pretty heinous.
It's happening
sometimes.
As we speak, as we
exactly.
witness. Yeah.
But you think back on to, you know, it's like when I love reading old books about, you know, mountain men and trappers in Alberta, like just like that kind of stuff. And they paint such a beautiful picture where it's like, you know, oh, at 7 years old, I was down at the creek. My mom would send me down to the creek and I wouldn't come home till I caught 7 trout because they had company coming. You know, it's like you just have these like different concepts of, and now it's just like, well, what's the fastest computer? How many phones can I have going on at one time? Like, it's just like the world has convinced us that we need so much.
Right.
When really we,
right. But what you're describing as hunter gatherer sort of life, I guess I need to retract what I said. The old ways were harder and the new ways are simpler, but not better, maybe, or not as spiritually fulfilling somehow or something.
Yeah. Like it's, you know, I've often said this to other people, like, I'd rather spend 12 grueling hours in my quarter acre garden weeding and hand picking bugs off of plants than I would rather, you know, spend 8 hours working a 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Right. Doing something I don't care about, even though that 9 to 5 is providing me with money in turn, which I can pay my bills and all this. And at the end of the day in the garden, all I get is a couple of sweet, juicy tomatoes. But those sweet, juicy tomatoes are pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And you know that, you know, it's a very complicated world we live in, I think.
Yeah.
Because there is no way to go back to those simpler times. Not that I've even really ever experienced them, or maybe they weren't simpler times, like you said, but I don't know. I'm a dreamer.
You're a dreamer, but there's an undercurrent, I think, of escapism in what you're talking about too. In the books you read or the pondering of the past and how people lived, you literally also, going back to this cabin, said, I'm out. I got to get out. I can't do this right now. And by the way, you were living on a farm, which there's work there, obviously, like you say. You weren't living in the big cities, and it doesn't sound like you're someone who immerses yourself in the internet and office work and these sorts of things, probably to some degree, but not to the extent, like you say, a 9 to 5. So escapism, I think, is a big part of this album, and maybe your mindset at the time, maybe still now, is that, what do you think of that phrase? Does that resonate with you?
Escapism?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the world needs a bit of an escape. I think everyone does. I think that we need to take like 48 steps back and just kind of look at the world and how it's being developed and how we're just kind of going through the motions. It's so strange. You know, I don't know how people are, I don't know how people are surviving in today's day and age. It's a really difficult world, and it never stops being difficult. That's the problem. It's the bills, and it's forced time away from the ones you love. And
Are you talking about work? Are you talking about information? I just want to home in on what you're getting at when you say,
I'm just talking about everything. We live in like a society that caters to a very small percentage of people. But the majority of the rest of those people just kind of follow along with it because that's just what it is. And you know, at the end of the year, or at the end of, I shouldn't say the year, at the end of your life, again, these are all cliches, but at the end of your life, you know, you can't take all your shit with you. And you look back on it and it's like, did I spend enough time with my family? Did I fucking have countless nights of anxiety lying in bed, eyes filled with tears because I don't know how I'm going to like put a decent meal on the table for my family? Sure, you may have nights like that, but did you spend that entire day with your kids on a fucking, on a Wednesday?
You can curse.
Just out in the woods? Like, okay, great. Just spending time with them. You know, it's like, I think that family and friends and community and partnerships and just comforts of love are so much more important than just stressing about money and bills and all the stuff with them. But you have to do those things, which is unfortunate.
Hey, thanks for listening to Creative Control, as always. As you may have heard me mention, I recently lost my day job, and I've had a few conversations with people since who've said, you had a day job? I thought your podcast was your day job. When I explained why it hasn't been my day job to a friend, he suggested I should share some of this information with people like you listening right now. So, in short, unless they have some giant exclusive million-dollar contract, podcasters are not paid to make stuff by companies like Apple and Spotify. Podcasters do not make any money from streaming royalties. Ad revenue is dependent on a certain threshold of downloads each month, and even if your show is accessed 30,000 times a month, the income you get is actually really minimal. So podcasters like me usually make time in our lives to support our communities and our interests to make these shows, and our most reliable source of income for this work is in fact crowdfunding. In my case, it's my Patreon. So if you'd like to receive ad-free episodes earlier than everyone else, regular newsletters and blog posts, bonus audio content, and support my work, quite literally, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm glad you invoked. I'm glad you invoked that special time again, because I wanted to follow up with you when you were discussing it earlier. Like, I don't know what life would have been like without the pandemic starting for me and my family. I mean, it sounds like you, or sorry, I feel privileged to be able to spend so much quality time with my family, and we've been thus far really lucky. We haven't gotten the virus or whatever, and we've taken precautions and are still living life.
Y'all's never got the COVID?
No, not yet. Really? We never tested positive for it. My kids, we all wear masks and stuff still. People don't like it when I talk about this, but I will just say, like, we've been lucky. You know what? I'm going to get off it because I'm not afraid of the people who don't like it, but I just want to say, like, we've been lucky. I think we're just lucky generally. We've taken our precautions. My kid plays basketball. My daughter goes to guides. They go to school. They're among the only ones masking, which sucks. And that's not going to last forever. At some point, the social peer pressure stuff will probably, but I don't know. They're just living in a nicer time than maybe I grew up in, where you would get, there was not bullying, just more insult stuff, I guess. Anyway, we're doing okay. My main point in bringing this up is we are really tight as a unit, and we spend a lot of time in this house together, and we bond over all sorts of things. And we go and do things sometimes when we are able to. And I don't know if that would have happened if we weren't sort of forced into this habit of doing it. I really don't know. Like, I mean, this whole time I've been working from home as well, day jobs or not. Yeah. And my wife does partially too. So we're just kind of always around. And I didn't have that growing up. And I don't know if that's good or bad, you know, in terms of their independence going forward. Because I was just used to being home alone for long yeah. stretches of time until my parents got home from work. And I'm sure that gave me a sense of independence. And I hope my kids have it too. I'm really on a ramble here. All this to say, I think this bonding time is something I will cherish forever. Because yeah. I just don't know that we would have had it without this. And I feel like you were kind of saying yeah. a similar thing.
You know, it was funny. It's like when the world, you know, quote unquote, went back to normal, it was almost hard to give yeah. up that sense of companionship.
Yes.
With your just the ones immediately around you. You know, it was like my one daughter does go to public school, and my son, he's still homeschooled.
Yeah.
Choices they've made on their own. We let them make their own decisions. But my daughter's 13 now. She wanted a little bit of more, you know, social interaction with kids her own age. But it's just, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, now not everyone's here all the time. And you know, of course, with all the good, there was also some bad. Like, there were times when I was ready to throw those kids out a window. You know, I'm sure they felt the same way about me.
Yeah.
Right? Like we were at each other's throats a lot. But, yeah. you know, if you think about how the world was and how it is now, and I, you know, we talk about independence and all this, and I'm not sure that independence, you know, really even means anything. It's like, people survive many years on this planet with, you know, whole families of six sleeping in the same bed every night yeah. till they were old enough to be married and leave the home, you know, like,
yeah.
and you know, we're still here. We're all still here. So something worked out over those many, many years, right? Of that kind of lifestyle happened.
Yeah.
You know, my 9-year-old son sleeps in the bed with us still. I don't find any shame in that. I don't think he should be ashamed in that. It's just it's where he's comfortable.
Yeah.
He might sleep in his own bedroom sometimes, but he finds comfort in it.
Interesting.
Does that make him any less independent than anybody else? I don't think so.
Yeah.
He's got his own brain. He can find his own way in the world. I'll be wondering where he is at times, and he's out in the backyard. He's built a cage out of sticks and has a tiny rabbit in there that he's playing with. Like it's cool, man.
Yeah.
Kids are magnificent creatures, and they will be themselves.
Yeah. I agree.
For as long as you let them.
I agree. And I think as parents, you know, you can't control the future. You can't control much, actually. So you just do your best to be there and love and support them. And you know what? To be honest, I've said it to my wife in recent weeks. Like, you know, I used to pick them up from school on the days I had to drive because we would go get my wife after. Some days we walk, some days we drive. And anyway, of late, what would normally happen is I'd pick them up from their school or schools now. They're both at different schools. And we'd go get my wife. And these days they're like, can we just go home before? I'm like, you want to go to yeah. the house before? Because it's on the way. You want to go to the house yeah. and you don't want to get your... They're like, yeah, we just want to go home. They're getting that independent streak themselves and they're asserting it a little yeah. bit. And so they spend time and they notice they can spend a little bit of time here on their own, and they still do all the stuff where they're supposed to do. They wash their lunch dishes. They do their piano practice. They do their homework. And when we get back, they're done and they're chilling. And sometimes their doors are closed upstairs and they have their time. And I think that's a great sign. I don't think I have to worry about their independence is what I'm saying. I think it'll come. I will say I've been very sentimental and emotional of late about the future. Because I can see my son is taller than my wife now. My son is the star of his basketball team. These little flickers of yeah. the future of him not being around here are getting to me.
Yeah.
There's a song on your new album called Goodbye. It is a real departure from the rest of this beautiful album, because I would describe the rest of the songs in this record as being really lush and orchestrated on some level. Believe you made it in Nashville. Is that right? Most of it?
Yeah, I made the record. Yeah, my last three records, actually. This one being the third. I just met a really great guy down there. His name's Andrea Tokic, and he runs a studio called The Bomb Shelter.
Yeah.
And on my album Songs Of, it was kind of a whim. We had talked on the phone a few times. He offered to produce it. He seemed really cool on the phone. And I went down there to make this record. We hit it off. Guy was you know, I consider him a close friend now, which is why I like to continue making records with him. Who knows what the future holds, but you know, I went back there for Coyote, and then we were working on the idea of making this album here, Northwind in Canada. I had like a team of guys lined up, a producer, but just timing didn't work out, and which I think in the grand scheme of things worked in my favor, because secretly in the back of my head, I did want to go down there and work with Andrea again. I like the adventure. I like the comfort. I like that I feel comfortable in that studio and feel comfortable with him.
Yeah.
But with Goodbye, it's interesting that you bring that song up, because when I went into the studio with that song, I don't know what was going on in my head, but I was dead set on the idea that I wanted that song to sound like a 90s country song.
Yeah.
I was like, man, this has got to sound like a country song straight out of the 90s. And he was like, okay, sure. Yeah, man, we can do that. And, you know, we worked on it and we did it. We made a song that sounded exactly like it was out of the 90s, you know, off of like country television music or whatever. And just like a lot of songs from the 90s in the country genre, it sucked. It ended up sucking huge. And I was super bummed. So I didn't know. I had this. The song to me was actually, it was a really special song, like emotionally and lyrically. Obviously, it's a song about, you know, growing old and watching your kids kind of take over. And for me, it's personal. It's about my son and that idea. And the way we recorded it, although exactly what I thought I wanted, it wasn't what I wanted. So we ended up, after I had spent a week at the cabin when I came back from recording this album. And on my way up there, I had booked time here at my home for a film crew to come in. And when I got back from the cabin, they were going to record 4 or 5 songs of mine from this album live on the farm.
Yeah.
And so while I was up at the cabin, I had to cut the trip a day short. And because I something happened in my mouth, I cracked a tooth
while
I was up there. I was in excruciating pain. And when you're in the middle of nowhere with no cell reception, no way to contact anybody, it's the worst. So
yeah.
This was on a weekend. You know, I drove home on a Saturday, got home Saturday evening, couldn't contact the dentist. Obviously, it was Sunday. So I just filled myself with drugs and Advil. And and on Monday, this film crew was coming over to record. So the film crew got here bright and early Monday morning. I was in excruciating pain. But when you book these things, you can't really be like, can your entire team come some other day? Like, it's happening, right? So I recorded.
Wow, you recorded this during a dental emergency? I can't imagine.
Yeah, I actually, it was funny because I wouldn't say we rushed the process, but I did get in for emergency dental surgery later that day on Monday in the afternoon. So we got everything done in the morning quick. But if you look at any of these live videos or listen to any of these live versions of these songs that are out on YouTube and stuff, during those takes, I was in excruciating pain, but I hit it, I think, pretty well. However,
yeah,
the version of Goodbye that I recorded that day live off the floor, last song we were doing in the day, I had to get to the dentist like right after that take. So we just put one take. I played that song in my dining room and it came across exactly how I had hoped that song was supposed to come across. And I ended up taking the audio from that live version. And that's what we used as the last track for this album, Northwind. Yeah. We used a one take live off the floor version of me playing it with a fucking cracked tooth in the back of my mouth.
Man.
But it just, it felt right. It felt a little bit more desperate and a little bit more honest. And yeah, that's why it sounds so drastically different than the rest of the album, because that was the one track that wasn't recorded in Nashville. It was just recorded with a couple of microphones in my dining room.
You know, it's everything you said fascinates me there on a few different levels. The arrangement of this song fascinates me because you do an interesting thing with the chorus where there's two different versions of the chorus, I would say. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I say
that's really
change the words around a little bit in each chorus and sing it slightly differently.
It's really unusual and interesting. So that's really cool. You mentioned 90s country music. And to be honest, it recalls a song by Clint Black.
Okay.
For me, where he sings, sorry, I'm not a Clint Black fan per se. I have no issues with the Clint Black that I can think of. Maybe I should read up more about him. But
I don't want
famously.
I was gonna say I don't want to like be unworthy of the hat that I'm wearing, but I'm actually not familiar with Clint Black's music at all. I hope no one's gonna chastise me for that one.
Oh no, it's fine. But you should check out this song, and I know it because I am a huge fan of the Larry Sanders Show.
Okay.
And it works out that Clint Black sings this song about saying goodbye on the series finale,
okay.
As I recall. Like he takes on the, for those who remember The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, Bette Midler sang to Johnny and he was in tears. Like, anyway, he sings this beautiful country song about saying goodbye, and it actually vaguely reminds me. Oh. Your song vaguely reminds me of that song. And then you said 90s country music. I'm like, okay, something going on here. So I'll send you a link to that
clip.
Yeah,
please do. I want to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's quite fascinating. So, yeah, it sticks out on this record. Otherwise, this is a true, in the tradition of Nashville recording that I understand anyway, an artist like yourself from away will book some time in Nashville with somebody and go down there on their lonesome generally, unless they have a band. And then there's a band there that the producer, the studio has.
Yeah.
Is that what happened with you on some level?
Somewhat. So I'm, again, fortunate enough for this to be my third time down in Nashville with the same producer at the same studio. And because of this, I've also made some friends over the years. So while it was kind of Andrea's idea to gather the band members and the people that were coming in, they were all people that I've worked with on the past two records.
Right.
You know, minus a couple, like there was a new guy there, one of the fellows I had not met before. He was fantastic. And I think Andrea just, maybe I'm just discrediting myself here. Maybe I'm just a very social person who makes friends easier. But Andrea, in my opinion, has a way of just knowing me. I'm sure many people he works with, but he has a way of knowing me and knowing who I'll be comfortable with and who I'll get along with, right? Like he brought in, you know, Dave Racine, the drummer. He worked on me with the, on the original album Songs Of, and he brought in Dennis Crouch on upright bass, who had been there for every album I've worked on. And same with Jack Lawrence, who I met when he was playing with City in Color, which is a very popular Canadian band, if you're not familiar with who they are. He was playing with them and they're friends of mine. So I met him through Dallas, the lead of City in Color. And, you know, it was just like, it was nice. I knew everybody almost. There was a couple people that had just come in, but I mean, they're definitely, you know, hired Nashville guns, but it was all familiar faces.
Most of them live in Nashville is kind of where I'm coming from.
For
right.
Sure.
And you've got one name that caught my attention here, and I appreciate you mentioning who you mentioned on guitar and pedal steel quite often, Chris Scruggs.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, some relation to Earl Scruggs.
Yeah.
I'm
he's of the Scruggs lineage. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he was somebody that I had not worked with previously, but he was very, very cool and really great to be around. So,
well, the record, despite I think what you were going through as you were writing these songs, I mean, that bit of doubt and darkness and what the hell are we doing is definitely here. Mm-hmm. But there's also a real whimsical quality to these songs as well. In some ways, I think there's some. They're very artful and enigmatic in some way, in a lot of ways, but they're also very direct. My daughter, who is 9, quite likes some of these songs. When Going Fishing came on the other day, she's like, because she went to a skating thing recently, and one of her friend's dads is a local, he's a musician who does like pubs and he plays cover songs.
Okay.
And when Going Fishing came on last night, we were playing a board game. And I had the record playing at the same time. She was like, didn't he play this song, the cover artist guy? And I was like, it seems highly unlikely that she's like, I'm pretty sure he played this song. And my wife was like, I don't think so. Like he was playing, you know, Hip and Van Morrison and these sorts of things. However, I will take this as a launching pad into Going Fishing, Dandelion, for example, even Coyote, which I alluded to earlier. There's a bit of a children's song quality to them, if I may. I'm not saying they're simple, but they have this sort of like imagery of well, there's lots of animals, obviously, in every instance. Dandelion, for those who haven't heard it, is about, I assume, a late dog. Is that correct?
Well, it's about my dog that is still alive today, but I woke up I woke up in a panic in a deep sweat one night at the cabin, having the most vivid dream of losing her. And she's basically my third child. So I wrote this song kind of with the idea that she wasn't around, almost like what do you call it? Like an ode to while still here.
Oh, okay. Oh, it's like a tribute. A living tribute.
A living tribute. Yeah. That's it.
So you got Dandelion going fishing. Sorry, I want to. I didn't. I wasn't maybe as tender and careful with my depiction of these songs. Would you agree to some extent that they come from this innocent place, maybe a bit more than
absolutely, other songs? Man. And that brings up an interesting point, because I've spent so many years of my life in the presence, in the company of like so many great musicians who are so poetic, so artistic in their words. And it's always been something for me that was hard to compete with. You know, I read the poetry, just even not even the songs, just the poetry that some of these people write. And I just go like, Jesus, like I can't do that. And it was always a hard thing for me, because being surrounded by that all the time, it was like, you can't just sing a song about a dog. You know, it was just like, you got to sing a song about, you know, whatever, Snowfall, and somehow that's about a dog, right? Like, it's just like, it was never my way of writing songs, but that's how I felt like I needed to write songs.
Yeah.
And something about being up at that cabin made me realize that there is poetry in very simple things.
Yeah.
At least for me, you know, probably helps from reading all of the books I've been reading, you know, authors like Andy Russell, right? Like Alberta, mountain man guide born in 1915. You know, it's like, I can read a chapter of one of his books and, you know, he's just talking about a fishing trip or, you know, wrangling a wild horse, like, but he just does it in such a way that it paints such a beautiful picture that I consider it poetry.
Yeah.
And they're just very simple stories. And I think that's kind of, for me anyways, I realized that after all the pandemic and after all the doubt in my songwriting and wonder if I even needed to do it, because it was always maybe so competitive in a weird way, just the worry that I wasn't doing as well as the people around me. It got to a point where I was just like, I'm just going to write the things I like. And even if they're simple, they're simple, but that's just kind of how my mind works. You know, I'm going to write a song about fishing. I'm going to write a song about an experience I had with a coyote in my backyard, albeit a little bit embellished, but it's just like, you know, that's just how I think that my songwriting needs to be. It took me this long to figure that out, but I think that's how it needs to be.
And that's fair. And where I was coming from with this line of questioning is that when I'm talking about sort of the appeal for children, you actually did end up in this realm with a book where one of your songs was turned into a children's book. Is that correct?
Well, I wrote a kid's album.
Yeah.
Right? Have we talked since I wrote the kid's album?
I don't know. When did you put out the kid's album?
I don't remember. A year or two ago.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think we... So I think the last time you were on, we talked about Coyote.
Okay.
But there was also...
I think the kid's album was post-Coyote.
Yeah. Okay. So, Okay. So, and I'm sorry if I'm less familiar with it, because there's also a book. Am I right about that?
Yes, there is a book. We just did a kid's book. My sister, Jill Burton, incredible artist. You can find her on Instagram as The Painted Planet, but she illustrated the whole book. And we just took the one song, the most popular song that kids really seem to vibe with, the song called The Mountain Man.
Yeah.
And we just turned it into a book because, I don't know, I think that music's a beautiful thing. I think that literature is a beautiful thing. And I think that the idea of holding something in your hand, tangible, you know, like a piece of paper that you're reading words off of instead of a screen or an iPad, I think that's very important and can't die, even though I think there is a digital version of the book somewhere out there. But I just think something like that is pretty important. So I was offered the opportunity to do the book and I took it.
I will say to anyone who's a new parent, and I hope that Spencer and I don't fill you with sadness about the passage of time with your kids, but I still get to read books to my daughter. I don't get to do that with my son anymore because he's outgrown it and I don't think he wants to do it. But I cherish it so much. And I learn a lot about her sense of humor and her sense of things as we read. We alternate pages too. So she reads a page, I read a page, or we do character voices. And when I think about things I will miss, that is something I will miss. So I really cherish, and we sing, I take a guitar up there and I sing her to sleep. And I'm going to miss that like you won't believe. So I just want to say that to convey that to you, Spencer, because it's interesting that you bring this up. I'm sorry that I'm less familiar with Mountain Man. Did writing a song cycle, an album for kids, alter you as a songwriter? Because I guess what I'm coming to is maybe it did. There are songs in this record that I think, and I've tried to convey to you, that appeal to my daughter in particular. Specific songs where she's like nodding her head and trying to sing along already, and the album's still sort of young in her brain. It has that appeal, I think, potentially for kids. And knowing that you just came off the experience of writing specifically for kids, maybe I'm answering my own question. It seems like it may have affected you as a songwriter generally in terms of that marriage between plain-spoken, clear language that a kid could understand and being artful at the same time. Does that make sense?
I think it's possible. Yeah, I think that writing those kids songs, yeah, probably influenced me in some unbeknownst way. You know, just the idea of simplicity. I think that we all need more simplicity in our lives, yeah. Right? Like everything's got to be so complex, and you know, I just think it's nice to sit back and listen to a song about, you know, if you're a kid, you're listening to The Mountain Man, hopefully, and you know, you're listening to a song about a fellow living in the woods, or you know, a song about the different types of animals that you might find when you hit up your local pond, right? Like yeah. These are all themes on my kid's record, but you know, that brings us to a song like Going Fishing on this new album. It's like far and above anything. The one thing that I hope people take away from that song is the feeling of, yeah, I kind of want to go fishing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's what I want with that, right? It's like, it doesn't need to be this, like, this big dramatic thing that changes your life. I just, you know, some songs are like that, some songs aren't. And sometimes I just think that at the end of the day, if you can feel something like an idea, let's go fishing, that's super important too.
Yeah. And then the album Before Goodbye, which we've already discussed, is this anomaly. It's a solo recording. Up until that point, as I alluded to, there's these lush orchestrated songs, country songs with beautiful backup vocals. It's beautiful. It's really well arranged. It sounds great. North Wind is just this triumphant, the title track. My goodness. Like, there's just such a propulsive, impassioned quality to that song. I don't really have a question. Mm-hmm. It's just a beautiful, in a way, I think of it as the proper album closer, even though it's the penultimate song Before Goodbye. It's just wonderful. And you sound, everyone sounds amazing on that song. Like, so I just want to say, like, this is a feat. You've done a really great job here, is what I wanted to say.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I think it's fun for kids of all ages, is what I'll say too. It's got a lot of appeal there. Do you think you'll do more? Is the kids' book experience something where you might follow that for another version?
Yeah,
of that?
It all depends. Yeah. I mean, I haven't done many children's performances since the book's been released.
Yeah.
So, you know, whoever owns it just ordered it online or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see where it goes. Okay. Children's performances are interesting. They're the hardest crowd to play for. Children's performances are the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, I've seen you do shows for adults, and I've seen you do shows where kids are present and you're trying to interact with them. And Spencer, I don't mean to overflatter you, but I think you may recall, I think of you as one of the funniest in-between song banterers I've ever seen. And I still have like a sense memory of laughing so hard when we were in St. John's, Newfoundland at your... Clearly, like, these were bits that you came up with, and I just couldn't, or maybe they were in the moment. I don't know. Whatever you came up with, I remember holding my sides, laughing. So I just, I have no, heart or soul. I don't laugh. So you really, right. You got to me that day. And, no, I'm kidding. Huh. No, you're very funny. So I think you might, maybe we talked about this before, but like, that's a sweet spot for someone like you. Children's performers, your Raffies, your Fred Penners, what an amazing evergreen career you have, because you play to the kids and their parents, and then everyone ages, and then you're playing to the next generation of kids, their parents, their grandparents, and it can just keep going because they all have this sentimental attachment to when they first saw Raffy and they first saw Fred Penner. Yeah.
Get them hooked when they're young, you know?
I'm not saying anything nefarious.
Keep them with me forever.
Anyway, I think you have this in you, is what I'm saying, is some sort of... and I think it would be heartfelt from you as a dad, is what I'm getting at, too. I think that goodbye song, I didn't really convey it to, but it got to me. These songs about your kids and the life you're living, they really affected me emotionally, so... I hope they'll do the same for others. As we're speaking, I believe you have at least three shows booked in early March of 2024. Yeah. Anything you want to tell us beyond those? I'll link to whatever news I can via your websites and
That's great.
But so people can keep an eye on those. But future plans, do you have anything you can share with us at this point?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're doing a few festivals this summer, and we're working on rolling out more smaller solo album release concerts throughout the year. But as of now, the main three, for me, the big focus is March 7th, 8th, and 9th. I'm bringing in quite a large band for those shows. It's going to be Toronto, Ontario, London, Ontario, and St. Catharines, Ontario. And we're going to do our best to recreate the album. So we have backup singers and violin players and pedal steel and bass and drums and all that. So, yeah, that's kind of where we're going with that. And then, like I said, slowly, we're just going to be rolling out shows throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Three, four shows a month is kind of the plan.
Okay,
great. Tough to have a heavy touring schedule when you're a father who enjoys the company of his family, right? You want to stay home as much as you can, I guess. So,
yeah,
we're slowly working on rolling stuff out. But those first three dates in March, 7th, 8th, and 9th, those are our main focus right now.
Okay, so as people hear this, they'll have enough time to get their tickets to those shows and get out there.
Oh, yeah, tickets. You can go to my website or my Instagram or wherever. There's links everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing them out there on the internet.
Feel free to tell me them now, and I'll make sure they're so people can hear them. Yeah. Where can people go to learn more about you?
Well, I guess SpencerBurtonMusic.com would be the hub.
Okay.
And you can go through there. You can find, you know, Instagram and ticket links and all that stuff.
And the album info as well. I'll link to all those things in the show notes. So if you're listening to this, click on those if you can get to those shows. And sorry, I probably wrong about this. You said you're putting a band together or bringing in a band. Is it anyone from the actual sessions?
No one from the actual sessions, just friends from around Ontario. But, you know, it's a bit of a hot shot lineup. I've got Matt Kelly and John Spinarski, who are also in the City in Color band.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be playing with me. I've got Allie Corbett from the East Coast on violin. Carly Akins, she's doing backup vocals. She's sang with a ton of awesome bands, including Bahamas. She's a fantastic vocalist. I've got Matt Tomlinson from a band called The Dirty Nil out in Hamilton playing bass. And I've got, make sure I remember, and Eric Grice, he's playing drums, and he is in a band called Ultimata. So we're kind of just getting everyone together, and rehearsals start next week. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Okay, great. Well, that's great. I'm so happy for you. Are you writing already, or is that not happened yet?
I'm always writing in here. My writing process is very strange. It's just me dinking around on a guitar for a year, and then that last week, then I give up hope on music, and then I go to a cabin and I write an album.
Well, it sounds like you may have 50 songs to fine tune and figure out if they have
a... I'll have to play around with those and see. There might be at least an EP's worth of music in there.
An EP out of 50 songs. Well, your standards are too high about yourself, I think, maybe. I'm sure there's some valuable stuff in there, and I can't wait to hear it myself. All right. Well, Spencer, I appreciate you coming back on the show and chatting with me about all sorts of things, as usual. We didn't get into vintage T-shirts this time, so that was probably good. Maybe
not this time. Instead of just my crazy conspiracy theories about how the world's ending or whatever.
I don't think they were. That's what I was saying. If you speak truth to power, now you're viewed as a doomer or a glum or whatever.
Right.
And I'm like,
yeah,
it's right in front of our faces and whatever. I don't know.
Just talk about the world however you want. That's what I think is important.
I think so too. Yeah. Whatever your reality might be, maybe. I don't know if I agree with that completely, but I think we're in that zone. Anyway, I'm digressing and leading us into another half an hour conversation as I try to wrap up. If there's a song from North Wind that we can go out on, I wonder if you can choose one for us, Spencer, and tell us why it came to mind.
Well, Goodbye would be the cliche pick. Just almost as cliche as putting a song called Goodbye as the last track of your album. But I think, why don't we go with, you know what, let's go with the one my son likes the most, which is Going Fishing.
Okay. And again, my daughter, I would say, I think between that and Dandelion, my daughter likes those two songs the best. But let's go with Going Fishing, Going Fishing, I should say.
Just
I mispronounce it. Yeah, there's only one G, actually.
I mispronounce it too.
Going Fishing. From this beautiful album, North Wind, by Spencer Burton. Spencer, always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for making time for me.
Absolutely.
And I hope we talk again. Best of luck in the future.
Thanks for having me on, Vish.
Found some time for a drive long distance. Turn the radio on for a listen. Nothing coming through seems to pique my ear. I pick sounds for the longest drive down to the lake on the other side of town, where I go to spend my days. 'Cause I'm going fishing, a bit of paradise. Go tell all my friends I'm doing just fine. Don't need to catch a thing, just throw a line. I'm doing fine, I'm doing fine, I'm doing alright. Trucks filled with all my gear, a can of worms, a cup of cold beer. Ain't no day like this in such a long while. I got my dog in the passenger side, a little like me and a little bit wild. Always comes along for a real good time. 'Cause I'm going fishing, a bit of paradise. Go tell all my friends I'm doing just fine. Don't need to catch a thing, just throw a line. I'm doing fine, I'm doing fine, I'm doing alright. Need more time in a day. Need more time getting away. Glassy water, no more waves. Off the shore, I'll throw it away. I'm going fishing, a bit of paradise. Go tell all my friends I'm a-doing just fine. Don't need to catch a thing, just throw a line. I'm doing fine, I'm doing fine, I'm doing alright. 'Cause I'm going fishing, a bit of paradise. Tell my wife and kids I'm a-doing just fine. Don't need to catch a thing, just throw a line. I'm doing fine, I'm doing fine, I'm doing alright. I'm doing fine, I'm doing fine, I'm doing alright.
Always nice to catch up with Spencer. What a great artist and a good buddy. He's a good guy. I like Spencer a lot. I hope you were charmed by him and eager to check out his music. This time, Spencer was on the 843rd episode of Creative Control, following the 842nd episode of the show, which, if you haven't heard it yet, features Spencer's old bandmate, Daniel Romano. They were in Attack in Black together, so nice continuity. Weird fortuitous circumstances. Anyway, this is episode 843 of Creative Control. This show is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available just about wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you've been searching for and you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. Me and the show are on various social media platforms. If you click on that link that says follow Vish online, you'll be directed to links to my Instagram and my Twitter and Facebook pages and Blue Sky and Threads and YouTube and all those sorts of things. I'm trying to centralize things at patreon.com/creativecontrol, but I'm so busy with just doing the show that I haven't done a great job of this, but it's a busy little hub of activity there, patreon.com/creativecontrol, and that's where you can go to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. There are different tiers. At the $4 tier, you start to really get some perks. Ad-free episodes earlier than everybody else. $6 tier, you get that, plus you get bonus content and material, you know, extra stuff. $10 tier a month, that's where you get entered into the monthly draws for prize packs. All sorts of, and I mean, overall, as you probably have heard a couple times on the show already, that's how the Patreon, that's how I get supported for doing all this work, so if you or someone you know who's full of money feels like being like a benefactor for the show, that would be helpful. Go to patreon.com/creativecontrol and make your flexible monthly donation today, or get your rich aunt or uncle to be like, what are you doing with all your money? Why don't you give some of it to that guy? He's good. Anyway, I appreciate your support. Thank you very much. I also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. As always, thanks to my good buddy Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on the show. Learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you out there listening this far into this episode with Spencer Burton. I hope you, if you're a fan of Spencer's, I hope you enjoyed our talk. If you're unfamiliar with Spencer, man, I hope you'll check out certainly his new album, North Wind, and his whole back catalog is amazing. So, yeah, thank you for joining Spencer and I for this conversation, and I hope that you'll join me for my next one with whomever it is, and that we connect soon. Thanks again. Be well. Bye for now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.